Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome everyone to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. And I am Deanna Potter, your petite powerhouse and the host for Sassy Sales and Business Development. And with me today is our leading lady, Dr. Deborah Dupree. Good morning, Deborah. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Deanna. I really appreciate being on today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I want to just let everybody know and remind everybody our topic today is crushing conflicts to boost your bottom line. And there is no doubt we have all heard the studies that continue to show us conflict affects productivity, bottom line results in business, it affects synergy and culture and turnover. And I know that you are an expert in relationships. There's no doubt about it. I know your company has relationships at work consulting, and you, lovely lady, have lots of experience in, I know, leadership development, corporate training. You have a doctorate degree in psychology, but I got to tell you, one of the things that fascinates me is really your upbringing. It is so interesting to me that you are on the young end of 9 kids, and you come from a German and Norwegian heritage, correct?
That's correct, Deanna. You've been doing your homework.
I have. So tell me, let's start there. I mean, I believe, and I think a lot of, you know, our listeners know, we absorb a lot of our programming and our learning and our experiences from, you know, the time we're little. What did you learn about and observe about conflict and communication when you were growing up? How did it affect you?
Well, that's a great question, because I really do credit my upbringing, both being a large family as well as my cultural heritage, as to the driving force behind what I do today in conflict. Being on the younger end of 9 kids, you know, we had a very active household. And basically I found that, you know, we were always referred to, quite frankly, as the 3 little kids. And so we were often to be seen and not heard. And So there was a lot of watching and observing, you know, my older brothers and sisters and my parents interact and engage. And one of the things I would say is not only being on the young end of a large family, you know, all strong personalities, and yet really, you know, problems weren't talked about. They weren't openly discussed. And so you could feel the tension, you could see things were going on, but oftentimes not talked about.
So you got, I would say that you began your career probably at the age of about 4 or 5, it sounds like.
Yes, I guess I did.
All of that watching, observing, listening, all of those good things. You started your training very young, and you didn't even realize it, I guess.
Yeah, that's very true. You know, again, I saw how, you know, relationships were damaged. I could see how relationships healed. And quite honestly, it was when I was in high school, I had my first psychology class, and I was just astounded. You know, it's like people actually know about this stuff. They know how to work through, you know, some of these personality clashes and you know, solve arguments. And so it was really fascinating to me. My love of psychology started very young.
Wow. Did you find that at that age you were running home in high school going, I'm going to fix the whole family?
Yeah. Well, you know, since most of my siblings were much older, you know, by the time I learned what I learned, we were already on our own. And, you know, I have to say there are patterns of behavior I still carry with me that probably are not always the best. But I try really hard to be as good as I can in my communication these days.
I love it. You know, and thank you so much for being so transparent. I always can appreciate when we're human enough to say, you know what, I'm not perfect. I, too, have flaws, and, you know, I have to be careful of what I do. You know, you use the term bad bossing, and I love that phrase. Can you describe for our listeners what that means and what some of the characteristics of a bad boss is in today's business world?
Ah, yes. You know, whenever I speak and I have a chance to ask people, you know, how many of you have ever had a bad boss? And you know, at least half, if not two-thirds of the hands go up when you're asked, have you had a bad boss in your life? And the thing is that, you know, the word boss is actually sort of an old term, but we all relate to it in terms of, you know, someone who directs us and guides us, et cetera. When we come to bad bossing, I mean, in fact, I did a program last week, and I asked people, what are some words that come up when you talk about bad bossing? And, you know, I get words like being self-centered, micromanaged, controlling, not really present, sort of out of touch with how people are feeling, inconsistent, bad listener, impatient, mean. As opposed to, you know, a good boss, then you get words that, like, you know, people who have integrity, people who will listen, people who will encourage you, have passion for what they do. They empower you. They're reasonable, and they definitely lead. They are aware of how people are impacted, and they lead effectively. So big differences, just, you know, by asking people what words come up. And so I think, you know, the bottom line is a bad bossing really is someone who might be technically good at what they do, but they're not very people connected. They might be top in sales or make great revenues, but they're not really connected with the people.
You know, it's funny because as you were saying all of those words and descriptions, I wrote down, everything seems so emotionally based and not, I was saying logistically, but technically based, yeah. And, you know, I have had a lot of conversations with, you know, people in business, and we talk a lot about how when the recession hit, if you were able to hold on to a job in a company, you kind of stuck it out and you made it through the worst of it. And maybe now you're finding yourself in that boss or leader position because you were technically good at the job, and now you're supposed to be leading teams. The budgets are coming back around. Companies are going, okay, now we're going to pay for training again. And they're looking for those soft skill training because they've got people leading teams who haven't been trained in the leadership touchy-feely stuff. They're good at the job. They know how to put the widget together, but they don't know necessarily how to, you know, inspire a team, lead a team, create the culture, do the synergy, because that wasn't what they were hired to do. They were hired to put the widget together. Are you experiencing that right now when you go out and you're working with companies and working with, you know, departments and teams?
Yes, absolutely, Deanna. You know, it's certainly the economy affects what companies do. And, you know, even though it's been, you know, 7 years more or less since the recession of 2008, and certainly, you know, training budgets were the first thing to go. But, yeah, you know, we are seeing a resurging interest in really developing leadership skills. And one of the things that I always advocate, and I imagine you probably see this too, is that, you know, while people might be technically good, you know, that old adage is that, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, and that's oftentimes the attitude a lot of companies would take when they would be, you know, confronted with somebody who is great at what they do, but, you know, not a good boss, and they wouldn't do anything about it. But the damage, the havoc it wreaks is phenomenal. A couple statistics I'd like to share with you. It's been known, actually, for quite a long time, you know, a good 20 years or more, that, and I think IBM was the original precursor of the study on this, but when you talk about just getting rid of people, it actually takes 1.5 to 2 times that person's salary to replace that person. And so when we talk about, you know, good people leaving good organizations because of bad bossing, you know, that's a huge cost to organizations. They're losing a lot of good people who won't tolerate a bad boss anymore. So that's on one level. And then on the other hand, though, is that Gallup did a study in 2008 taking a look at, you know, what keeps people engaged. And there are a couple of things. What they found was only about 20% of people are thoroughly engaged, love their work, passionate about what they do, while 60% were only marginally engaged. You know, they came to work and they did their job and stuff, but they could do a lot better. And 20% were found to be disengaged, and people who simply showed up for the paycheck and really didn't contribute to the organization. And Gallup, you know, actually costed all of that out in terms of what does that mean and to American businesses. And the numbers were staggering, like $358 billion was actually lost to organizations.
Wow.
And, yeah. And so when, you know, when you're presented with that kind of information, you know, the effects of bad bossing, when you don't do something to turn those people around, and the cost of losing people, that you know, the damage, the havoc it wreaks is phenomenal. And so that's really money that could be recaptured if organizations would invest in the people side of things. And that's what we're seeing, again, a sort of a turnaround, a resurging of investment in terms of really working with some of the leaders of the organization, because when you have a good leader, that resonates throughout the entire organization. And people stay, people are happy.
Yeah. No, you said something that I made some notes on, and I was going to, I know, because I was looking, doing a little research here before we got together, that you do say good people leave good organizations because of bad bossing. And I know that you lived through that experience yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, and can you offer some advice to our listeners should someone be in the midst of a similar situation?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's a tough situation. One of the things I'll start with, first of all, Deanna, is another stat, is that the Department of Labor did a study a number of years ago, which has actually been corroborated by some more recent research. But they found that, you know, when people leave organizations, a good 60% of them are leaving organizations because of conflict that's unresolved, and oftentimes that conflict is with their direct boss. So 60% of people who leave. And so when we talk about people who leave, it's, you know, become situations that are simply intolerable and the organization's not doing anything about it. My own situation goes back about 3 or 4 years. I was actually on a contract, and there was a situation of where I was brought in. I didn't go seeking it, and so that was really a nice honor. And there are a lot of good things about the whole thing. The organization was great. I knew people in the organization, and so I was just really, really proud to be part of this. But as time went on, not being included in meetings, not being communicated to, efforts to try to set up meetings, I really felt an outsider and not being included. And my efforts to get help, when I would go talk to some of the people to just say, how could I handle the situation? A lot of feedback I got was, well, that's just who she is, or that's just how that works. You know, there's always been a problem. We've had other complaints. Really can't do anything about it. And so I really felt stuck, you know, and disempowered to do anything. And my dissatisfaction, you know, continued to grow. And I just was not happy in terms of not getting, you know, not getting input, not getting feedback, not being included. And then ultimately, I have to admit, I was called on something that they didn't like about what I had done. And at that point, you know, I was already pretty unhappy, and my contract was coming up for renegotiation, and I said, I don't know if I can continue doing this. This is not how I want to live my life. I don't like the tension that is part of my every day, and I want better communication. I mean, that's after all the business I'm in, and I wasn't getting it. And so ultimately, you know, it was a sort of a mutual decision, but at the same time, it was one that was not good at the time. And again, my efforts to try to work through it were just not successful. It was a very unhappy period of time in my life.
Wow. You know, I know that. I think lots of people, I know me myself have been in that situation, and it's so tough. It's so tough, and I know, mm-hmm. I think about my husband's got some frustrations with a boss. I know I've got friends of mine. So it's so often, even when I'm in situations, you know, you and I share some commonalities in our profession, you talk to people and they say, yeah, I understand, you know, I've got good skills in communications and I'm really trying, but that whole idea of managing upward, I know you've heard the term, we talk about it. You know, people mm-hmm. will ask, you know, how do I do that? You know, what can you suggest? regardless of what level you may be coaching, training people at, there's often another level above that. What is some of your advice for people managing upward, especially during disagreements or conflict?
Yeah, it is a difficult situation. I grant that. And it really does take courage to go there. And there's a saying in the mediation world that I'll share with you. It takes courage to be curious, and it takes curiosity to be courageous. And so in a way, you have to be courageous enough to be curious about trying to unravel what's going on. And so, and I talk a lot, too, about, you know, it's really important that you own, you know, how you're impacted. Because when you come from a place of, you know, this is, you know, whether you agree or disagree with me, this is how I feel, right, wrong, or indifferent. And this is how I'm impacted. I'm willing to take a look at, you know, maybe my own stuff. Maybe I've, you know, got some misguided direction or notions about this, but I need to take, you know, I need to own my own stuff. But this kind of behavior is impacting me. And so really sort of working through that yourself first is real important as far as what is it about this behavior. And by the way, that's something that's also very, very important, is to separate the behavior that somebody is displaying from the person that they are. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for pointing that out. And, you know, I noticed that even when you were describing your situation, again, and it's such an, you know, just an honest quality that I really appreciate about you, being able to say, you know, I understand the role I played. Sometimes I think we get so, and it's hard not to be. It's a very stressful situation, obviously. Conflict brings out emotions. It's hard not to. But sometimes we get so caught up in the emotional piece, it's hard to stand back and look at the logistics and our behaviors involved in it. And such a great point to be able to say, you know, how am I contributing? Because this isn't just a one-sided situation. So such great advice. Really, really good. So let me ask you this. I think that, you know, understanding how we can learn through this is really important. Can you walk us through some of the steps to diffuse conflict in the workplace? And I know I'm always curious from your standpoint, knowing so much of what you do. Where are the steps different depending on the dynamics of the relationship, meaning that if it's a peer situation versus a team dynamic versus perhaps, like we were saying, you know, a boss situation, do the steps change?
Well, I would say yes and no. I mean, the basic steps, no. Now, who it is with might require or I would suggest involve a little bit more pre-work, so to speak. Because, for example, if it's a peer, you know, like in any case, you want to start off with yourself. You know, what, how am I impacted? What bothers me? You know, what's the behavior here? What's important to me? Maybe I'm getting worked up emotionally, like you said, about something that really isn't that significant. And so when I'm working with people, I say, you know, always step back and what's the big picture here? And how important is this particular thing in the big picture of life? Another way of looking at that is go to the balcony. You know, whenever we go to the balcony, we get a much better view of things, right? And so stepping out of the immediacy of the situation and trying to get that bigger picture is key for anyone to get started. Now, if it is a peer, it might be a little bit more straightforward. But the other thing is to always say, well, what's, you know, if you're talking about the workplace, what's the business problem here? You know, is it just that this person's personality annoys me, or, you know, is it something, some odd habit or something that they have? Again, if we can try to translate it into what's the business problem here or what's the relationship problem here, then we can focus a little bit more specifically. And by doing that, then we actually help the other person take a look at the issue more objectively as well. There's a strategy I like to encourage people to do is have a conversation about having a conversation. And so what I mean by that then is that not just going to somebody and confronting them with whatever, you know, is on your mind, because when you do that, then you're actually catching them off guard. You've been thinking about it, but they may not have been thinking about it. And so have a conversation. You know, Deanna, you know, I've been thinking about what happened the other day. Or I'm thinking about the exchange we had during our meeting, and I've been giving it some thought. I'd really like to talk to you further about that. How about if we get together later today, like at 4 o'clock, and just take another 10 or 15 minutes to sort of clear the air? Would you be open to doing that?
Yeah, I love that idea. Perfect. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
So by doing that, I'm identifying the issue, you know, and then I'm also, you know, owning that, you know, I've been thinking about it. I'd like to have a little bit more conversation about that. And then I'm inviting you to engage in that conversation at a later time. And I'm also framing it by just saying 10 or 15 minutes to get a little more clarity about things.
Uh-huh,
and so,
uh-huh.
And so when we'd actually engage in, I would say, you know, okay, you know, thanks, Deanna, for joining me. I'd like to, you know, again, I'd like to talk further about that meeting we had. And then I would start off by saying, you know, how were you impacted by that meeting? What went on for you? So I would invite you. So that builds on Stephen Covey's fifth habit, seek to understand before you seek to be understood.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you always want to get the other person's input first, you know. And so, and then you have a chance to share yours, and now you already know where you might agree, and now you only have to focus on, well, what points of difference do we have? And then, okay, now that we've hurt each other, how can we move forward in a way that this doesn't happen again? And so that's a real simple kind of structure that can be used to handle most differences. And quite honestly, the earlier we address things, the easier it is to get resolved.
Yeah.
The longer we wait, the more tension.
Yes, and don't you find, I find often that people underestimate the power of questions. So often you see people go in with assumptions about how people feel, what they're thinking, instead of asking the question and listening to the answer, and you realize often they find that it's very different from what they're assuming. So powerful, you know, we say it's very basic, but sometimes the basics can lead us to such a quicker and much more peaceful outcome. So such great things. I got to tell you, I love your term, go to the balcony. I love that. I wrote that down instantly, go to the balcony. Love that visual. I have this question for you. You know, yeah, go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just going to say, I want to give credit where credit is due. That's not mine.
Yeah.
That comes from the work of William Ury, who is one of the co-authors of the book Getting to Yes back in the 80s. And so he's a great conflict resolver and internationally knows. I want to give him credit for that word.
Oh, very good. It's important that we do that. Important that we do that. Well, I'm sure that he would appreciate that, you know, it made an impact on you and you're continuing to share his work. But what a great visual. Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about individuals and, you know, the interpersonal exchange, but what is the biggest mistake, or let's just call them opportunities, that companies have to avoid or minimize conflicts in the workplace, do you think?
That's a million-dollar question. I think, you know, what I would say first and foremost is that, one, it really starts at the top. It starts with leadership in terms of how they model working with differences and managing conflict. Too often, again, you know, people would be quick to ignore what's going on or turn the cheek the other way, and then things fester. And so, you know, it really does start with the leadership in terms of how they model addressing issues and problems and things like that. You know, good leaders will surround themselves with people who know even more. Bad leaders or bad bosses, you can't even put bad with leadership because leadership should be good. Bad bosses tend to, you know, do it their way and not seek the input of others. And so that's probably one of the biggest things. And we're seeing really a transformation in leadership that will embrace more of those human qualities. You used the word, you know, touchy-feely before. And actually, I know that's used a lot, but it's really, you know, good communication is really the bottom line. And good communication means that you're listening even more than you're speaking. And so really setting the climate for, you know, how people engage in a healthy discussion, because conflict is often given a bad rap as only being negative, but quite honestly, a lot of good things can come out of conflict when managed well, and that's the key thing. Conflict that's not managed well is where it escalates and gets destructive. The conflict, when managed well, can actually be constructive, leading to some great new and innovative ideas, and oftentimes people are afraid to really address those differences for fear that they'll get out of hand.
I couldn't agree more. I'm in a 22-year marriage, and some of the best things have come out of some conflict from time to time. and a happy 22-year marriage, but you got to have conflict sometimes. It's the spice of life, you know? So let me ask you this. let me ask you this. I know you do mediation, and we don't have a lot of time left, but that really is a world that I'm not as familiar with. Can you tell us a little bit about the process, you know, what it's like? What are some of maybe the more common cases that you handle in the world of business mediation? I'd love to get a little glimpse of it.
Okay, great. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I've been doing mediation in the workplace for over 20 years now. It's hard to believe. But mediation in any form is a structured process, and the design of the process is that, you know, things do unfold. And so people can feel safe that there is a structure to it. It's not just people going in to deal with conflict. And that sort of helps people's mindsets, too, knowing that, you know, there's somebody who's skilled, who's going to navigate people through the differences by following this process. And so with the process, it's really about, again, identifying what's the issue or issues to be resolved. And what I find is really helpful, again, is defining the business problem created by this issue. And then each party gets a chance to actually, you know, talk about how they're impacted by what's going on. And again, through skillful navigation by the mediator, is helping, and you said it already, asking open-ended questions is powerful in terms of getting what I call below the waterline, getting to what really drives people's behaviors in terms of their beliefs, their expectations, their assumptions, attitudes, concerns, hopes, fears, values, and needs. All of that stuff needs to get, you know, brought out. And so that's what mediation can help do in a safe, confidential, constructive manner. And the whole goal is to work towards mutual resolution. I like to use the words both gain. How can we craft a solution here that where both parties gain out of this to resolve the differences that got them to this place in the first place?
Hmm. What are some common cases that you handle?
What I do a lot of is oftentimes, you know, workplace differences where there might actually be some allegations of discrimination or harassment or hostile workplace. Right. That's a bulk of what I do. But And that's what we call more of a formal level. But mediation can actually be used in informal levels, even just addressing differences between people. I had a case last year where two top salespeople in Southern California, something had happened. They had both filed claims against each other. The internal investigation found that they were unfounded, and yet these people were not getting along. And finally, the organization said, you know, either you resolve this, folks, or both of you might be out of here because we can't keep going on this way. It was disrupting business, finally. And so through some one-on-one coaching, I worked with them individually, you know, helped them learn some things about themselves and others, did a lot around communication and conflict management styles, and then we finally sat down for mediation, had it resolved in an hour and a half. This has been going on for a year. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing. Wow. So tell me, so that leads me into, I want to give our listeners the opportunity to understand, I know that you do, obviously, the business mediation, and you do corporate training, I believe, and you do coaching. What other services do you offer, and tell them, how can they follow up with you, and if they have questions, want to talk to you more about your services, and what's the best way to reach you, and all that other good stuff.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Yes, as you said, I do business mediation for among employees, among leaders, among family-owned businesses as well, and also do some divorce. But with my corporate training, I engage a lot with leadership development, and I provide one-on-one coaching around various issues, such as, you know, conflict management, communication styles, presentation styles, managing generational differences, managing gender differences, and again, looking at leadership development. So one-on-one coaching, training, mediation. And then as far as how people can contact me, I do have a website, and I'm also on LinkedIn. My website is relationships-at-work.com. And on LinkedIn, I'm RTM coach. And I have a 1-800 number, 800-743-1973. And my email address is Dr. Dupree, dr.dupree@deborahdupree.com.
Excellent. Deborah, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. It's been wonderful, wonderful chatting with you. And I want to thank everyone for listening in today to our show at Women Lead Radio. And we are here every Monday morning at 9 a.m., and we will be back again next week. Thank you again, Deborah. I really do appreciate it.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where life-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.